afternoon update, only on Money FM 89.3. The View on Money FM 89.3.
Since their inauguration, her World's Women of the Year and the Young Woman Achiever of the Year awards have recognized women whose stellar achievements made them exceptional figures of strength, leadership, and inspiration both locally and overseas. This year, Her World celebrated the accomplishments of Miss Ng Kim Chu, Her World's Woman of the Year, and Amanda Chong, Her World's Young Woman Achiever of the Year, both of whom have made great strides in championing early childhood education and literacy in Singapore. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
It's great to have you with us, and congratulations on your award.
Thank you.
Let's start there, Amanda. Tell us, how did it feel to win the Young Woman Achiever of the Year award? Were you surprised?
Yes, I was. I mean, it's not something that you apply for, you know, you are, it's a nomination process. So I actually found out about it when I was in the middle of the woods in the Pacific Northwest, because I had gone there for a writing retreat for 2 weeks. It was with all women's writing residency, the Hitch Book Foundation. So authors like Gloria Steinem and Bernardine Evaristo, who won the Booker Prize, have all been previous residents at this rural retreat, literally in the middle of nowhere. And then suddenly I get a call from the editor-in-chief of Her World telling me I won an award. So I remember being slightly disoriented, but it was definitely an honor.
You're a lawyer, you're a writer, social justice advocate. Amanda, where do we begin with your career? Let's start off and take a look at, well, I mean, I want to know, how do you balance it all?
Well, I guess the tragic thing is that I probably don't sleep enough, but I'm probably programmed not to need as much sleep as a regular human being. Yeah, I'm always very hesitant to talk about this because I feel that, like, I don't want to encourage habits which are not sustainable. And when I examine my own kind of routines, I also question as to how long I can actually keep this going for. But it is definitely a challenge trying to balance everything, because my job as an international lawyer, I work for the government, does require a lot of travel. It requires odd hours, because sometimes we work on different time zones. And then on top of that, you know, I do treat my artistic career as like a separate career, right? Like I am very invested in terms of creating new work. I was previously writing poetry, but now I've moved into playwriting, which I really enjoy. And there are all of these balls that are kind of like kept in the air. But I would have to say that at the end of the day, I feel that I'm fueled by passion. It would be impossible for me to do this if my heart was not in every single thing that I do. And yeah, and I think I really am just driven by the fact that I love all of these things.
So fueled by passion instead of sleep, Amanda. Tell us, what were some of the challenges that you faced early on this journey? Because I know that it wasn't an easy road for you, was it?
Yeah, I think as a young woman, there's always a sense of imposter syndrome that you feel in different spaces, right? And I remember when I was publishing my first book, Professions, which is a poetry book, and a lot of it is about relationships, right? Like, so my experience of heartbreak in my 20s, whether that's through the loss of, you know, in the romantic sense, or whether that was the loss of friends. I had several friends who unfortunately died by suicide, and my grandmother who had dementia. So it was a lot about love and loss. And okay. I remember this big worry that I had going in was that nobody would want to read this book except for women. Like, it was going to be like a chick lit type of poetry book, right? And I think that's the kind of idea that a lot of young women writers feel. Because if you look at the Singapore Literature Prize, there was no woman who won it right up till, I think, 2 years ago, when Marilyn Tan finally won it. Before that, you know, it's still a fairly male-dominated scene. The gatekeepers tend to be male. And so as a woman, you do feel that and I think all of this is very subtle, right? You feel that perhaps there might be your voice as a writer may not be as important as that of a man. And I think all of these things are, you know, you have to kind of grow into it. You have to just try, and regardless of what kind of detractors say, you just have to push forward and have confidence in the work that you're putting out. And I feel also to have a good community of fellow writers who are supportive of you and who, and who validate what you have to say.
And that said, as you mentioned, balancing a career and your passion project, it's not easy. What would you say to those who are interested to do just that? There may be budding writers that are holding back because they're scared that perhaps their day job may suffer or they may face criticism in the office.
Well, I think that for me, how I did it in my earlier days of writing was really trying to fill the blank spaces of my day, right? So I would be writing in the queue to the, you know, when I'm in the hawker center buying lunch and there's a long queue to buy like chicken rice, I would be like writing on my phone. And I used to be a prosecutor. So I had time while waiting for my cases to be called in the mornings, right? When you're literally just in the courtroom and you're waiting for your case to be mentioned. And I would write during those times as well. So I think it was really just trying to have that discipline to find all these blank spaces of your day and then put it together and see what you can do with that time. But I would also add that what was very important to me was also consuming the art around me. So I think it's very important if you have any sort of like artistic aspirations to keep that well of inspiration within you full. And, you know, I was very interested in going to different, whether that's the theatre, whether that's going to the National Gallery, looking at the art that's being created by people in Southeast Asia or in Singapore. Because I think any kind of art really enters into a stream of what people are already creating and are already saying. And you have to understand your place in that first before you can really know what you have to say.
So what would you say inspires you then, Amanda?
Well, I am inspired by, I think truth and beauty is, and this is, I mean, it sounds like such a cliched answer, right? But I do think that all art needs to point towards that in some way, right? Like what I find powerful about art and poetry and theatre is how it really shows us our common humanity, and it opens up that space where we're able to engage with each other with a higher degree of empathy. And I think this is an antidote to the world that we have today where, you know, people tend to be very polarized in our opinions on issues, and there is no middle space for us to meet. But I think art is really helpful in that it helps to open up that middle space where we are less thinking with our logical minds, but thinking with our whole humanity, including our emotions. And then that actually, I feel, is a very powerful place because it expands that space of civic dialogue. And for me in particular, like, I do feel very strongly about women's issues, and a lot of my work in poetry, in plays, or even my academic writing is geared at talking about women's experiences. And in the areas of things that are very difficult to talk about, such as, you know, sexual assault, workplace harassment, right, or even abusive relationships. And I do want to create that space to honestly reflect women's experiences and a platform for it to be discussed more widely in society.
And it's interesting that you say that. We've got the news out today that Annie Ernaux has won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and she touches on some similar topics as well as a woman. Now, we've got a number of questions that have come in from our listeners for you, Amanda. Hongbin, would you like to share those with us?
Sure. So Alden says, really inspiring. Congratulations again, Amanda. And he asks, have you ever thought about giving up? What keeps you going?
I think it's really a sense of purpose, right, in everything that I do. And I do believe that, like, you know, everyone's created to, and placed on earth for a purpose. And I want to live out that purpose fully. So that's what keeps me going. And I think it's also really when you're acting in alignment with your purpose, there's also great joy in that. And you feel like, there's a connection, right? So it's not something where you feel like you're forced to do something. It is very energizing in and of itself to be doing something that you really love and that you feel you're created to do.
We've got another question that's come in from Paul Chan as well.
So Paul asks, congratulations, Amanda. Will you be featured in the upcoming Singapore Writers Festival?
Yes, I will be actually. And I'm doing the opening debate. And I believe the motion of the debate is this house believes remakes are better than the original. And it's so funny that I'm doing this. I'm doing this with Joe Tan, the actor, Rebecca Dorai, who's also an actor, and Joshua Ip, who is a writer. And I think it's funny that they've placed me doing this opening debate because I don't even watch Netflix. I don't have time, unfortunately.
So I like to say
I'm a stranger to pop culture. The only thing that I'm really familiar with is Taylor Swift.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So Amanda, I want to ask you this. You mentioned that you get very little sleep. What keeps you up at night then? What's your thought process as you're writing through the night?
Well, I actually find it I write at night because that's when I have like a longer stretch of time to write. I think for me, like, I'm always trying to create work that affects me first, because I don't think you can write if I'm writing about something that I want to create an emotional reaction in others, like, I feel that I have had to process these feelings first, and it has to come from a raw and honest and vulnerable place for me. For me, when I produce any work, like, I really want to touch like a deep well of human emotion in other people. Most recently, I'm working on a play under the Necessary Stage Playwrights Development Program led by Harish Sharma. So it's called Playwrights Cove. And in fact, it's leading up to readings, which are my play is going to be read on 5th November. And tickets are available on the Necessary Stage social media. But for this particular play, like, I really wanted to talk about the issue of how a lot of high-achieving women that I know and are actually in relationships which are toxic or even verging on abusive, but nobody has that language to talk about it. And it seems almost counterintuitive that women who are so, you know, put together in every way are in relationships which somehow invalidate them, or like that they are just not able to get out of. And I feel that I want that space for people to be able to discuss this, because it's such a difficult thing to talk about, because it comes with a lot of shame as well. And so I created this one-woman show, and which will be read on the 5th of November.
We're speaking with Amanda Chong, Her World Young Woman Achiever of the Year 2022. We're going to continue this conversation with Amanda on our social media, on Facebook, LinkedIn and YouTube. For those of you tuning in on radio, you can switch over to Facebook if you want to listen in to the rest of this conversation. If not, we will carry on programming on Money FM 89.3.
The Afternoon Update brings you the latest news and views to keep you informed. Tune in Monday to Friday from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. only on Money FM 80.
Amanda, so I've got to ask you, we've spoken about the project that you're working on. So who's going to be starring in this play on the 5th of November?
Sindhura Kalidas. So she is one of my very good friends. We actually were in Raffles Girls' School together in the drama club. And the very first thing that we did as little 13-year-olds was we acted in something together. And since then, you know, she has worked with the Finger Players and with the Necessary Stage. And she's just returned from her degree, her master's in dramaturgy in the UK. So I really wanted to create something for her. And also because I hear from her that there are not enough plays in Singapore which speak from the perspective of a brown woman, right? And to talk about something that's extremely universal, but from the perspective of a brown woman. So that was something that I really wanted to do through this play. And I wanted it to be funny and yet deeply affecting. And I knew that I could trust her absolutely with delivering it because she's a wonderful comic actor as well as a dramatic actor.
So that play is coming up on the 5th of November. And just remind us again, where can people find out more about it?
So you can go to The Necessary Stage, the Instagram. There will be a link in bio, and it's called it's presented under the Playwrights Co-devising platform, which is led by the Cultural Medallion winner Harish Sharma, who is an amazing, legendary playwright who comments on social issues way ahead of his time. Yeah, so he was talking about mental health in the 1990s, and I really respect his work.
We've got another question that's come in from Trina Hongbin. Would you like to share that with us?
What does it mean to you to be Her World's Young Woman Achiever of the Year?
Well, I actually, in my acceptance speech, I did say that, like, wow, this is such a lofty title. And actually, it made me think a lot about what my definition of achievement is, right? And And for me, like, I feel that there's a definition of achievement that pits women against each other, right? Where it makes us feel bad about our life choices, whether that's whether we get married or are single or have kids or not, or choose to stay at home or pursue our careers. And this whole, my whole reflection, it just made me think about my own mother. And that's my acceptance speech. And it turned out, you know, that so I wanted to focus my acceptance speech on honoring my mother. And my mother was voted most likely to be successful in the Hua Chong Junior College 1979 yearbook. But, you know, her life ended up looking very different from what her friends had imagined, because she ended up giving up her banking career to stay at home and look after four children. And I think from her life, I really see that, you know, achievement is not in the high places that you reach. It is really in how much of yourself you're willing to lay down for the benefit of others, even when no one is watching. So I think that has been the guiding principle in my life, that it is not, I don't define myself by, you know, the stages I get to stand on or any accolades that I win, but really by that sense of purpose and that sense of living my life in a way that is directed for the benefit of others rather than myself.
There's another question that's come in. This one is from one of our viewers on YouTube. They've said, do you face writer's block and how do you overcome it?
Oh, all the time, actually. Like, I think for me, what helps me a lot is I see the writing process as much longer than just writing, the act of putting pen to paper or typing stuff out on screen, right? I think tending lovingly to the obsessions that you have, you know, so there might be certain themes that you're interested in, or as I mentioned earlier, like going to watch something that inspires you or seeing a piece of art that inspires you. Like, I consider that part of the writing process. And I think that's a little bit more freeing when you think about your creative process in that way, right? When you are thinking that, like, if I can't write now, you know, all I need to do is just fill myself up with things that are inspiring, and that will get me on course to writing like a little bit downstream. So I'm a firm believer that, like, the work that needs to happen will always come out of you, but sometimes it takes a lot of internal work for you to crystallize those ideas, right? So even when I'm talking about my most recent play, which is about, like, abusive relationships, it was many months and many years in the making. Like, I would be thinking about it, right? But I didn't know exactly the form that it was going to come out in, right? Like, it could have been a poem, but I slowly crystallized the idea that I wanted it to be a one-woman play, and I wanted it to be funny, super funny at first, and then, like, heartbreaking, and I wanted to create this compelling character. And all of this only came after a lot of percolating. So I think of that percolation of ideas as part of your process, and it will free you to create at the time the creation needs to happen.
And speaking of that process and that percolation, you mentioned that you find blank spaces of time, whether it's at night or, you know, you're waiting in a taxi queue or, you know, just these pockets of time. How long does it take you to produce a piece? once you filled up all your pockets of time?
Well, the thing is that I guess the most ambitious undertaking that I've ever done was the T-Works 24-hour playwriting competition, which I did in July last year, right? And as the as per the title of the competition, it entailed writing a play within 24 hours. And based on certain prompts that were given during that period as well. And it was, I think, you know, it seems as if like, oh, I wrote the whole play in 24 hours, but I was thinking about it from way before that, right? Like, I was thinking about the kind of work that I wanted to create. Mm-hmm. So this, the work that came out of that was called Hashtag Women Supporting Women, and it ended up winning the competition. And it was staged earlier this year by T-Works. And was a play about different types of feminisms, right? Like, so one character is a Chinese millennial woman who is the partner of a law firm, and she runs this young women's empowerment conference. And then she meets her former intern, who's a Malay Gen Z woman. And then this story of a sexual assault that happened in their workplace mm-hmm. comes up, and both women have to kind of encounter the different types of feminisms that they subscribe to. And the play examines both the different types of feminisms across the intersections of class, race, and generation, as well as the scripts that women are meant to play as, you know, like to succeed in an office, right? In an office setting, mm-hmm. women are expected to project as perhaps like almost like a male bravado. But when you become a victim in a sexual assault trial, then you have to project this almost damsel in distress picture of trauma in order for your account to be validated. So I wanted to examine those different strands of women, different scripts that women are made to project. And all of these ideas were floating around my head, right? Because I'm always thinking about them. I used to be a sex crimes prosecutor. But it only crystallized within that 24-hour period where I had that time pressure and I was seriously writing for 24 hours. Like, I was popping caffeine mints. That's actually a thing. They're like mints which contain caffeine.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So just some facts for those of you watching us on social media. We've been popping them up on your screens. Amanda was awarded the 212th Commonwealth Point of Light in honour of her exceptional voluntary service in improving literacy rates by the late Queen Elizabeth II. She also is the co-founder of Readable, a non-profit organization that equips underserved children and migrant women with literacy skills. Amanda, let's go into that. Can you tell us, how did Readable come about?
So Readable was set up in 2014 with two of my co-founders, who are also lawyers, Jonathan Mark and Michelle Yeo. Yeah, so it's almost been 10 years, actually, of us working in this neighborhood in Chinatown. And it really came from seeing that there were children in one-room flats who were not able to read when they go into primary one, right? And already that sets them on the back foot, and it gives them an experience of failure when they enter primary one. And if you compare that to your middle-class kids, right, who are able to get access to literacy much earlier because their parents are conversant in English, they have books read to them in preschool, there already is a gap. Right. So I think for me, I really see this sort of work not so much as charity, but as justice, that something needs to be done to in order to put children in equal footing by the time that they go to school. So the program that we run focuses on literacy, and we started looking into numeracy as well. So we have a countable program. But on top of that, we also are interested in the holistic development of a child. So we also take children out to excursions, right? Artistic-based excursions. Thanks to the local theater company, Wild Rice, we have also Wonderful. Managed to take them to the theater several times. And we are just trying to really focus on building relationships. So, you know, our volunteers run the programs, and we ask for a minimum 6-month commitment from them, because we want... We see that it's so important for that relationship between the child and the volunteer to be a stable one in order for good educational outcomes to be built.
Okay, Amanda. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
It's been absolutely wonderful. We've been speaking with Amanda Chong, Her World Young Woman Achiever of the Year 2022.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.